Welcome to the Matt Bernier Show.
This is the DRF Players Podcast.
What's going on? Welcome into the Matt Bernier Show as well as the DRF Players Podcast. Today is Friday, August the 4th. My name is Matt Bernier. You can follow me on Twitter at Bernier underscore Matt. If you're watching on live.drf.com, livestream.com, Twitter or Facebook for the Racing Forum pages, thank you for doing so. You check it out, podcast, YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes, video.drf.com. We also have Spreaker this week, specifically from the DRF Podcast boys, and let's welcome them in. First and foremost, one of the creators, the originators of this entire shindig, he's at Looms Boldly on Twitter, and he's also the birthday boy, Peter Thomas Forenthal. Pete, what's happening, my friend?
Oh, what a great intro. I'm used to the one, you know, giving the flowery intros. It's very nice to get one, and it's great to be back doing an official DRF Players podcast with you, Matt, the first voice people ever heard when they tuned into the show. And always a pleasure to work with you. And as I was saying the other day on the show, my birthday gift to myself, we get to do three shows together this week. So how fun is that? Thanks for coming up with a great idea.
And today is the middle of those three. We'll dive into the third one here in a little bit, but we have to intro the third member of this entire shindig this afternoon. He is at UT Big Hair on Twitter. He's Jonathan Kinchin. Jonathan, how are we doing?
What's going on? I'm just trying to drink some water right now because I have a feeling Pete's got some plans for me in the next 24 to 48 hours, and I don't want to let him down. Like last year, I was asleep on his couch by about 11 o'clock, passed out. It's also the infamous time that we lost the $500 that fell out of my pocket that someone gave him, and we panicked about it, trying to find it for 3 days. He found it in his shorts that he took off when he skinny dipped in his neighbor's pool. It's like we hit the pick four 4 days later, and we didn't even have to bet.
I gotta be honest. If anything like that happens this weekend, it's a rousing success.
I have to correct one element of the story. There's proof on YouTube. There was no skinny dipping involved, but I did go for a dip in the neighbor's pool. You may be seeing similar on Whitney night, especially if we can get a result in some of these stakes races we're going to be talking about. There's really no better way to celebrate than going in the neighbor's pool after having one too many at your birthday party. So we'll have to see. We'll see what the racing offers us on Saturday if we can get things off to the proper start for some partying that evening.
Well, I tell you what, I don't know how it was for Jonathan getting up here, and Pete, I don't know how long you've actually been up here, because I heard the trials and tribulations trying to get here from, was it the ice cream man?
There's some more good stuff about the ice cream man, too. He got his revenge after I bludgeoned him on the pod the other day. Yes, his car, he somehow got his car towed. I missed opening day. The good news is I'm now up here for a good long stretch. Firmly ensconced in the house on the east side, Muggs handicapping Labrador Retriever, who really made her feelings known about a horse we'll be talking about a little bit later in the stakes races on the handicapping session last night with Travis and David Aragona that I did on DRF.com. But I am now here, I don't know for the duration, but for a good long stretch, and things are much more peaceful.
Well, I don't know if people were all jacked up this morning saying it's Whitney weekend and we've got to get up to Saratoga. Last night, I went up to my parents' house in Massachusetts, and I drove out this morning, and there was an 18-wheeler that almost went off the road. There was a car trying to pass another car that went into the median in the grass, and basically he was kind of like, I'm committed, I'm going for it. And then there was another car that almost completely crashed. So I don't know if people are just really excited about the weekend or what, but now that I'm here, and I feel weird, I wonder if anybody's listening or they're going to listen to the podcast. If you see a car and you see someone with a computer at the Saratoga Hilton, I'm not going like full creeper. I'm doing the show. So I just want to get that out there first and foremost. So let's hope that things sort of even out a little bit as we go on to this birthday weekend and Whitney weekend as well. Let's start off with the Whitney. Why bury the lead here? It's a grade one. It's a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic. Shameless self-promotion, 5 o'clock Eastern tomorrow, NBC will be going over this race. I guess let's start off with the horse that you have to talk about, and that's obviously Gunrunner has been nothing short of fantastic this year. As a four-year-old, he's gotten more and more professional. His run over in Dubai, he ran valiantly behind Arrowgate. We'll start off with you, Pete, because it is your birthday, you'll get first honor. I guess just as simple as, let's start off with something as simple as this. is there any scenario in which you think he can lose, Gunrunner?
Well, here's the one scenario where I think he could definitely lose. Let's just say, in theory, Jonathan Kinchin is alive to a 4 or 5 figure score single to Gunrunner. Then he could definitely, in that scenario, I could see him being off the board. In most other scenarios, and I would put the number as high as 90%, I just think even with the presence of a rabbit in here, that it's just the old best horse angle. You know, I think he can work out a favorable scenario, rabbit or no rabbit, and he's just going to have too much for these, in my opinion. And I would fully expect that nothing short of 80%, maybe even more, of my late play will be going right through Gunrunner. Not going to overthink this one. Going to take it for the mostly free square that I think it is and hope for the best from there.
Jonathan, from a figure standpoint, you look at the buyers, he has the highest last out buyer with a 110. From a time form U.S. standpoint, he has the highest last out time form U.S. rating with a 139. I think that may even be higher than anything Arrowgate's even earned, or at least on par right there. Is there any scenario that you think he's vulnerable?
Yeah, I think there is a scenario if Flo's out there jacking around. I mean, look, if you look at his, you know, I think a lot of people will comment that his two off-track races weren't very good. I think there's two things that I'll forgive him for. One is he wasn't very good then. He's not the horse that he is now when he had those two opportunities to run in an off-track. The second thing was, in both scenarios, he came from off the pace. I'm a big proponent, and when you're trying to take it to someone in an off-track, you want to be forwardly placed. I think that the kickback is unbelievably uncomfortable for a lot of horses when it's wet and heavy. It's sloppy mud hitting them in the face rather than little, you know, clobs of dirt. And I think that if Flo's not out there jacking around and puts this horse on the lead like he should be in this situation, regardless of what Cautious Giant is doing, even if Cautious Giant goes and freewheels out there, he should find a way to sit off of him. But taking him back and messing around, it could get a little bit dicey with the pace scenario. But just on talent alone, I don't see how this horse loses.
Well, Jonathan, you already tipped your hand a little bit as far as the off track is concerned. He's officially run 3 times on a wet track, although I don't include the World Cup, which they have listed as muddy officially. But at that point, you're in the desert. The thing was drying out. I didn't think that was a wet track. You go to those other races, though, as you made mention, the Haskell, he was off the pace. And then you go back to his 2-year-old year when he ran in the Kentucky Jockey Club. Both of those races a little bit less than stellar. Is it one of those things that now he's just that much better as a horse, Pete? Or are you of the opinion that you just don't really outgrow not liking a wet track?
Obviously, I'd rather it not be a wet track. I did think there, I take your point about Dubai and being in the desert, but I thought there was I thought there was enough moisture in it that if it was an issue with his hooves getting over it somehow, that the Dubai race shows me enough that it's not that. Jonathan's point about running style and wet track, I think, is worth considering. And the fact is that he's going to have no more. It's not like he's going to be. I see no scenario where he's going to be buried down inside. I think he's either going to be too wide, stalking a speed he can take at any time, or on the lead there. So neither of those circumstances really give me much pause. Technically, I suppose it's a better chance on a dry track, but I'm not really feeling that it's going to make much of a difference in my wager unless there are some other strange circumstances, weird things unfolding in real time that I see to make me give me a little bit more pause between now and then. For the most part, I think, you know, rain or shine, he's the horse.
For the people who can't swallow the chalk as easily as I can, let's pretend Gunrunner is not in here. And I've even seen this in the UK sometimes, where you can bet into a market where you take that horse out. Like, you take out Gunrunner and you pretend he's not in the race and you bet the other horses. For me, and I'm curious what you guys would do in this situation, I would love to bet to Brutus. I can't lean on him like I would like to lean on him with Gunrunner in the race, because I think he's such a likely winner.
Well, and that kind of leads into, if it's not Gunrunner, who's going to be, I believe Travis made him 4-5 in the morning line. I think he's probably going to be in that 1 or 2-5 range. If not him, then who? I think most people immediately look at Keen Ice, the horse that most recently won the Suburban. He obviously upset American Pharoah a couple of years back in the Travers. I've never been a Giant fan. I understand there are good people associated with this horse, and I've had to apologize in the past for bashing him. I think he's an honest horse. I don't think he's a superstar. Are people going to overrate that effort in the Suburban? Or are you going to look at another horse in here, like a Two Brutus, who you draw a line through the Brooklyn, you're left with two giant performances, and allegedly the connections have come out and said, I don't know specifically what the problem was, but they said he had a problem that day in the Brooklyn. Pete, is it as simple as you go with the horse that has some recent form and keen ice, and he also likes Saratoga? Or do you want to try to kind of shop around like Jonathan suggested?
I'm of two minds about keen ice. One, as a horse who I've always respected his accomplishments, but he's not a horse I've wagered on to do anything but run third and fourth in my own betting. So then you see a horse like that come out and put up a huge race like the one in the Suburban. It's usually not a great idea to then get on board for the next start. That said, the Suburban was so impressive, not only the huge 106 speed figure, but earned without the benefit of a setup, slow fractions in there. It is possible that in this case, that was just a new level of ability. And while I don't see him troubling Gunrunner, Jonathan was referring to the without favorite markets they have in the UK. And if there was such a thing for this race, he would have to be the horse I'd go with. Just the combination of what I'd call the flow move up and the figure development that this horse has shown, the affinity for the local track. I just think, and one other thing, a lot of times the strong second choice in a race like this is going to be very likely, in my opinion, to run off the board, because at some point they're going to really try and get up into the teeth of that super duper heavy favorite. Keen Ice, his running style, he's just going to be kind of running his own race and should be able to, I don't see them making some aggressive early move after Gunrunner. If they do that, they're going to be off the board. I think if he just runs his Keen Ice race, I think that should just lead him right into second here.
Before we actually discuss Two Brutus, I want to stay on Keen Ice for a moment, because I know you guys talked about, and many people have talked about, the way that he basically ran against the flow of the Suburban. I have a theory. I'm curious if you guys both think I'm nuts for thinking this way. I've long thought that the way that he has run, he would end up being a turf horse, and there's a little bit of turf in this pedigree. My theory with the Suburban is it was actually run more like a turf race than a dirt race, where they didn't go at all early on, and he was the one that could outfinish everyone. When you kind of get that accordion, when everyone is separated by 2.5 lengths, he's going to finish better than the other horses. Is that me making a case to be against this horse here, or am I crazy?
Elliot, plug your ears real quick. I'll almost give Elliot a second to turn down his volume. All right. Okay. I joke, Elliot Honecker is part owner of Keen Ice, and we pick on his horses a lot because they've cost me a lot of money. So the thing about Keen Ice to me is that it drives me nuts, and it happens in Naira all the time. I believe that when you have a horse that could be loose on the lead and you allow a closer like Keen Ice to stay close to you, the idea that you're going to have something left for the stretch and then you're going to draw away, I just don't agree with that. I am of the belief that you're inviting the closer into the race. You're allowing a horse with a better late kick and more stamina than you to be 2 to 3 lengths off of you, like that accordion, like you said. And I think that it was advantageous to him to be that close. Although, yes, he was closing into a slow pace, I still think that being close and out kicking a horse in Shaman Ghost, who didn't show up that day, and otherwise a kind of weak field, that's why Shaman Ghost was bet so heavily that day. I don't think it's the flow upgrade of the century that we see sometimes. However, you have to give him some credit still for closing into a slow pace.
I agree with that. Pete, where do you land on that?
I have a slightly contrarian opinion about it, and it basically comes down to this. I would totally agree with what JK just said. If the figure had come back, say, in mid-90s or high 90s, the final figure is what really wins me over to Keen Ice, because he had to run so fast late in that race to get that speed figure to the 106 where Beyer had it. And I think the bigger point JK made about pace, I think it's a question of efficiency. I think if you can, Paul Matisse, when he talks about pace, envisions essentially a straight line that is like the efficiently run race. And very often in dirt races, you'll see horses running fast early above that line, and then they have to slow down late. They do what he would call a downlining. In this case, I think it was they were running well below that line early on in the race. And to JK's point, that does give closers a chance. But when your final figure is still finishing up above the par for that for what you would have expected that race to go in final figure-wise, I think that's a significant difference than if the final of the race also ended up below that line, if you're following this complicated visual metaphor that I'm attempting to spin off the top of my head. But for me, the fact that the late part of the race was so fast and the final figure was so fast make me look at it another way. But I think that's a smart way to look at racing in general. And a lot of times I would agree with that. I get the concept. I just think this horse may have taken a step forward.
It's entirely possible. And your point is well taken, well received, because that is one of those sort of things when you talk about speed figure making. It's very difficult to get a fast figure in a slowly run race early on. Generally speaking, that's just going to slow everything else down. The fact that Keen Ice was able to finish in 202 flat after sitting off of early fractions, half mile, I think it was in 51 or almost something in that ballpark, 49, 50, something like that. So point well taken. Jonathan, you touched on Two Brutus a little bit before. We talked about Keen Ice. He's run just to the inside for Gary Contessa. What happened in the Brooklyn? Because I was a big believer that day, and I understand he was 1-2, but I had him singled in everything, and he dropped anchor. He was beat with at least a half mile, if not 5/8 to go at Belmont. Prior to that, he ran a hole in the wind in the flat out, and I thought he ran really well in the Excelsior.
Yeah, no, I think that both of his figures that he earned those in those two races were phenomenal. I think he got back-to-back 133s on Timeform US. And you're right. He had zero excuse except for the fact that Jonathan was alive to him. So I guess that probably had something to do with it. But I'm not joking, seriously. I'll give him another chance. There's a lot of times in situations like that when a horse runs so poorly that I'll just kind of forgive him. Maybe there was something. Maybe he stepped on a rock. Maybe they put the wrong bit in his mouth. And hopefully you can pick up on those stories through DRF. And some of the stories that all of our contributors write, and you can usually catch some of those things. I haven't heard exactly what happened to him that day. He was bad. And he would be the only one, to be honest, that I would use as an alternate to Gunrunner, just because I feel like Keen Ice is going to be overbet.
Pete, where do you land on Two Brutus?
Well, does the distance give you a little bit of pause, JK, with Two Brutus? I mean, I get it, but I don't know. Is this horse... Does he need more ground? Is he going to find the mile and eighth just a little bit too sharp against this level of competition?
Well,
That's my fear.
His last four races down south in Chile were a mile and an eighth, he won by 7, a mile and a 16th, he won by 9, a mile by 2, a mile and a 16th by 7. Now, obviously, he's running against horses that are about the same talent as me and Matt in a horse suit, but the fact that he was able to do it at that level, the stakes levels down there going shorter is not necessarily an issue for me. And to me, if Gunrunner gets beat, it's because Cautious Giant runs him into the ground. And I would think that Irad is going to will drop Two Brutus back out of this thing a little bit, and he'll be able to finish with that cutback from a mile and a half to a mile and an eighth.
One last comment on this horse before we sort of button up the Whitney and move on. As far as Two Brutus is concerned, do you guys view it as a positive, or do you read anything into the fact that he was entered in the Birdstone yesterday? He would have been very, very tough to beat in there when you see the way that race finished, and they chose to go to a much, much tougher spot. They knew who was going to show up in the Whitney. Do you read anything into that?
I mean, I read into it. I think it's a little bit of a sign of confidence. There's another enter-not-enter situation that I read even deeper into later in the card, I'm sure we'll talk about. But yeah, I mean, this is probably one that is a confidence builder, and obviously it's a grade one. Even if he runs second in here, it's in a $1.2 million race, it's not really a negative.
Pete, anything to read out of it?
I can only see it as a positive, just a sign that the horse is doing well, and he's definitely. I'm not anti the horse to the point where I leave him off entirely, but one that I would consider just far more for third and fourth for the aforementioned concerns. But I wouldn't talk anybody off of elevating him higher than that. I just, the the seemingly on the buyer scale, it's declining three races in a row, and then you throw in the concerns about the distance. Race design wise, though, JK makes a good point about Erad maybe just holding him up, and he should be able to finish. No problem with the horse running third.
It'll be interesting to see what we get. The Grade One Whitney scheduled to go race number 9 tomorrow. You've got War Story. You've got Breaking Lucky we didn't touch on, but all eyes are going to be on Gun Runner. We'll see if he can pass the test and win the Grade One Whitney. We have a seminar tomorrow morning, 11 o'clock, and for that, I'm going to kind of shift it over to Pete. Pete, take it away.
Absolutely. I've been having a lot of fun doing these Naira Betts hosted or Naira Betts presented seminars in the Pavilion tent. There are actually less seminars and more just general horse racing shows. I've had some great guests so far, and they start at 11 o'clock, and we'll just talk for half an hour about really whatever we feel like it from the different goings-on at racing in Saratoga or perhaps out west at Del Mar to some contest talk. I'm sure tomorrow will be tilted a little bit towards that. And then we'll run through the card and do some spot plays and talk about, at least for a little while, how each of us are looking to attack this Whitney Day card. And we'll have, at that point, all the real-time info of what the weather ends up doing and be able to talk about that. Folks, if you want to come join us, you'd be more than welcome. 11 to 11:30, the Pavilion tent is located down by the far turn. It is on the backyard side of the grandstand. There should be some seats in there, some good tables to stand. There's some vendors in there as well. You can check out everything going on in the Pavilion tent and stick around after and say hi to us. It's been a great chance to get to meet and say hello to a bunch of listeners, and I'm really looking forward to having these guys join me for tomorrow's extravaganza. It should be cool.
I saw you guys. You were with, I believe, Paul maybe 2 weeks ago or last week.
Last week was Paul and Chick Matisse, and we it was hysterical watching those two guys lovingly but make fun of each other and their different handicapping and horse playing styles, especially Chick telling Paul he bet too many races, and Paul expecting us to give him sympathy because he'd done so poorly in the NHC before he won the 800,000. For that, I told him I had to break out the world's smallest violin. But we had some good back and forth, and I expect we'll have more of the same tomorrow. And throughout the meet, going to be there every Saturday from 11 to 11:30. Naira Betts have been periscoping the shows as well, so folks will have a chance to check that out tomorrow if you want to. If you're not sick of us by the end of this hour, tune in tomorrow on Periscope and check that out as well.
Now, Jonathan, have you been on? Were you on last year with Pete at any of these things?
I was. It was me, Travis Stone, I think Watchmaker. Okay. It was the day. I'll never forget. It was the day that Brooklyn Bobby ran, and we were. So there was a lot of talk about, you know, whether he was going to be over bet or not. So yeah, it was fun. We had a good time. We had a. They actually have a bar in there, so I got to get my day started off right.
Yeah, I got to be honest. Every time I come up here, now I haven't seen the racetrack yet because, again, I'm being a weirdo sitting in a car in a parking lot. But there's something I can't speak for you guys, but I go through ruts occasionally in racing where I'm just kind of I need a breather. But you just got to kind of keep trucking on whether you want to or not. And the past month and a half, that's kind of where I've been. Coming up here, though, that always changes. That I mean, you can't help. Now, look, the betting and the racing may not work out for you. I can't make any promises, but just being here is uplifting. I think it's good for the mind, the body, and the spirit.
I couldn't agree more. It's amazing how, I mean, I'd almost say that a losing day at Saratoga is better than a winning day at many other racetracks. Not all of them, but I was out there yesterday, and it was not a good day from a parimutuel point of view. A couple of painful seconds and some really silly betting errors. But just I had a box. I somehow managed to get into the fancy area without being shot on sight, which is always a win in of itself, and was sitting with the boys from L.A., Lower Albany, in a fine box right there between the eighth pole and the finish line, and just soaking in the atmosphere. It was one of those days where I'll just remember that. I'll carry those good vibes with me, even though we weren't able to turn it into a winning day at the Windows. And then as typical at Saratoga, it's always fun to move around, not necessarily spend the whole day in the same place. Ended up hanging out at the Paddock Bar, just had a couple of drinks there, saw a bunch of old friends, a bunch of people I had seen for the first time this meet. That's another amazing thing about being up here all the time. Even though, you know, you've been here for a while, you get this constant rotating cast of characters, and it follows a rhythm. There's certain people you expect to see Alabama weekend, certain people who roll in for the sales or the tournament. And there was definitely that vibe, some Bloodstock folks who I see about once a year wandering around under the tent at the Paddock Bar yesterday. And it's just great to catch that energy and vibe that really, I mean, yes, it happens at Keeneland, it happens at Del Mar, but there's something really special about how it happens at Saratoga. JK, you're the perfect person to speak to this because am I correct that you hadn't been here before 2015 and now it seems like it's a regular spot on your dance card? What about Saratoga special to you?
Yeah, 2015 was the kind of the first time. You know, that was kind of the first time I started picking up and really checking out places. The first time I went to Keeneland was 2015. I was, most of my life kind of took place, racing life took place on the West Coast. And so once I got there, it's like it's one of those places, Keeneland and Saratoga, that although they're not the flip flops and shorts and Eddie Logan of the West Coast that I really, really love, that kind of laid back vibe at the racetrack, Keeneland and Saratoga consistently continue to sneak into my top 1, 2, 3 tracks. They're really pressing Santa Anita at every time I go to one of them. I really enjoy going to those places. And actually, I kind of had I'm going to put you on the spot with a tricky question. On your birthday, obviously your birthday weekend is always the Whitney weekend. If you could rearrange the racing calendar, is there another race at Saratoga that for your birthday present you would rather have than the Whitney? Or am I just looking into it too much because this year's edition isn't the best, but would you trade a different stakes race on for your birthday stake?
I wouldn't. I the Whitney is to me sort of the co-signature race of the meet. And I love the fact that it's the older horses. I'm nothing against three-year-olds. Obviously, they're amazingly fun. We follow them. We talk about them so much on podcasts and shows like Matt's. And people are so plugged into three-year-olds, and they're really exciting. But I feel like why not have the best grade one for the best horses be the one that I get to celebrate on my birthday weekend. I wouldn't trade it for anything. And that's an honest answer. You know, Travers is too crazy anyway. I feel like I would just get the birthday event would just be lost in the mass of things happening. We still usually have enough energy to do something fun on Saturday night. That's much trickier when it comes to Travers, especially this year, I think, when we've got a certain fight to watch late on Travers night. I don't know how we're even going to be standing, but I'm very happy to have Whitney weekend and my birthday coincide. I wouldn't have it any other way.
As far as just overall racing is concerned, last weekend was a bit of a, let's just call it a cluster. You had some oddities as far as results are concerned. Hopefully this weekend, maybe I'm not suggesting that we want, you know, short prices. Well, maybe Jonathan does, but, you know, I'm going to kind of turn this over to Pete and say, we've got what, 3 other stakes races that we want to chop up here in the next 25 minutes or so.
Yeah. I think we should talk about the rest of this late pick 4. And I would not mind seeing some sanity prevail. We discussed last weekend stakes. If folks want to go back and listen to that on Tuesday's show, we got some nice feedback about that. And it was one of those tough days where it was some of those horses that I had been targeting for underneath and they end up winning. And you could have knocked me over with a feather several times. I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of a return to logical results here. And let's talk it through and see. Maybe you guys will be looking for the big balloons. I usually end up somewhere more, if not out and out favorites like Jonathan, somewhere in the mid-priced range. And I do feel bad. We're giving JK such a hard time about his chalk eating. He is the man who did pick multiple $100 horses on last summer on this show. But it's just too much fun to take shots at you, JK. Hope you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all. I've actually been feeling kind of combative lately, so I'm ready for someone to step on my toes. I had someone said something to me on Twitter, and they backed off of it, so there's no reason to even address it. But they said something, and I thought they were saying something else. I had this long, like, response I typed out on the text, like the little text app on your phone. I was ready to fire back, but then they pulled back, so I didn't have to do it. So I still got a little bit in me. I'm ready to rock and roll. I had a challenge ready to roll out and everything. So
that's strong. I can honestly say I've never gotten to that point, but I almost want to now.
Yeah, so well,
I was ready to rock and roll.
So if you see JK at the Paddock Bar this weekend, and I'm sure you will if you're at the Paddock Bar this weekend, keep that in mind, folks. He's ornery, but I'm going to bet that it's nothing a boozy milkshake couldn't cure, or two. So,
no. What's that? No, I'm that word that you kept calling your daughter the last time I was in Brooklyn. What's that word? I want to use that. I want to use that this weekend.
There's an English word, you know, when Perrin, we lived over there for that little while in late 2015, and we picked up in the family on some good English slang. Stroppy is the word JK is referring to. This means like disagreeable, basically.
Stroppy.
Yeah. Yes. Why are you being stroppy? Perrin, stop being stroppy. And so we throw it out there, and it seems to resonate with her. It gets through to her, and generally will chill her out a little bit. And when JK was with us in the dungeon, staying in the dungeon in Brooklyn the other week, he appreciated that. So, but Jonathan, once you walk into, I know you're in Saratoga now, but once you walk into those grounds and head over to our area, are you still going to really be feeling stroppy? What human being could?
Oh, I'll be let someone step on my toes. I'll be stroppy, all right.
No. Oh God, I hope we don't get to make good on that promise.
No, you give me some French fries from Shake Shack. You give me a double with bacon with no bread, a shake with some rum in it, a couple of the paddock the posts is what they call them. It's like a Moscow mule. Maybe a hug from Dez. I'll be good to go.
All right, let's talk about some of this racing on Saturday. First race we're going to talk about kicks off the Naira Betts Pick 5. We're going to be talking, we already talked the Whitney. We'll talk about three of the other stakes races. Maybe, I don't know if you guys have looked at the nightcap. I almost feel like we should throw in a quick thought about it just because it would be the end of this Naira Betts Pick 5. But it kicks off with race 7. It's the Lure going a mile and a 16th. Matt, how did you see this one?
All right, so the first thing that people need to understand is, unless it's changed since last time I looked at the weather, it sounds like overnight tonight and early tomorrow could get kind of gross, could get a little bit messy. So I'm almost banking on that being the case because I don't think there's a ton of gas in this race. I mean, maybe there's a couple of horses that want to go. You're going to have Vorticity, who's going to go from dirt to turf. That's if that horse even runs, figures to go from there. A horse that I've always been a fan of, and I think, Pete, you've always been a bit of a fan of his as well. He's no favors with that outside post, but McKagan really appreciates some given the ground. And, I mean, he's won at Saratoga before. I think the distance, he doesn't want any more than a mile and a 16th, but I think he's capable at a mile and a 16th. If he can get out to the front, I think Carmouche has got to be aggressive. You got to send, even if you're hung two or three paths wide going into the first turn. I mean, he's just a horse that he's not going to get bet in a field like this because you've got too many other names in here. And I think he's got every right, if he can be forward, to take advantage. Now, if the ground is indeed a little on the wet side, even though he's been gone since October of last year, I think you've got to look at Takeover Target for Chad, too. Because this horse, on firm going, I mean, he's dreadful. But you give him some cut, he's a different animal. So, I mean, those would probably be the two. I have nothing against Projected, but he's kind of uninteresting to me at a short price.
Yeah, the current weather forecast does call for rain overnight into tomorrow. I do believe things should be clear and decent for the races tomorrow, but I do think that idea of there being a little bit of give in the grass makes a lot of sense, and those are some interesting ways to go. JK, how do you see this one?
It's one of those situations where it's like, I agree with Matt, the post in a normal world, it's like, oh, damn, he drew way outside. But like with Kendrick up, with it being like a semi-paceless race, I kind of love when they draw out there because they can't jack around. Like Kendrick has to go forward get position. And I feel like that even if he wanted to do something dumb, just trying to get position is going to put him right where he needs to be. He's run well on a yielding course before at Aqueduct, two back. You know, the early pace figures on time form were red. I mean, he wasn't an easy walk. He was on a loose lead, but he was running a little bit. So I love the draw there. I love that Kendrick's there. Kendrick's one of those guys. You don't typically say, I can't believe Kendrick wasn't on the lead. I can't believe Kendrick rated that horse. He doesn't usually do that. So I would think that that's kind of the perfect scenario for him. And then I'm with him on the Takeover Target thing. Takeover Target is always run well with a little bit of give. From what I've heard, I think the workout report that will come out, I guess tomorrow's will come out late tonight or tomorrow morning from DRF will suggest that the workout that Takeover Target had a couple back with, why am I going blank on the horse's name? I'll have it in 12 seconds before I'm even done. The Chad horse, sorry, Time Test. He worked with Time Test and apparently he did well in that work. Not like he outworked or anything, but he worked with him, and Time Test potentially is going to be the favorite next weekend and the 4-star Dave. So I think Takeover Target's one that could run well as well. So, you know, pretty much the same thing for me. The 2 and the 12 will be the base of my plays in that race.
I want to throw out one here and get your guys' opinion. This is another horse who we've talked about on many DRF Players podcasts past. Number 7, Black Type, for me, has a lot of excuses over the course of the last 3 races. And if you go back beyond that, you see some form that could make him very dangerous in this spot. I think he acts on wet ground based on a reading of the PPs. I don't think he'll be that far back. Matt, do you give him any count?
Yeah, you know, I liked him in the Dixie, and he didn't have the best of goes, but he really didn't have any true excuse. Although, at the same time, you just look at the way that race was run. I mean, World Approval would have needed to fall down to lose just because he had a perfect trip the whole way. The Makers 46, he had zero chance. It was so much better than it looks on paper. He was just trapped in behind horses. And that most recent run, I mean, I don't really have a major issue with it. Carafa, I don't think he ran particularly well last weekend down at Monmouth, but he's also 100 years old. I could certainly see this horse. The big thing for me is he's got to be a price because he's not the most trustworthy horse. And if you're going to be dealing with a horse like this, make sure you're getting paid. He's 8 on the morning line. I think if he's in that 8 or 10 to 1 range, I mean, I'm going to use him in multis for sure.
Yeah, I mean, for me, he's been a victim of pace in a couple of times, and it could well be that again. But I like the way the horse finishes up, and I would assume he'd be all of the 8 or 10 to 1 you're requiring. You have any thoughts on him, JK, or any other ideas in the lure?
No, I completely agree. He's one of those horses, like Matt said, you can't really trust him just because he's off and on. I don't think that the service will be a problem. I think the same can be said kind of about Ring Weekend too. It's like he's kind of off and on, seeing greatness from him, and then seeing just some really kind of a poor rides. It's interesting that Jose shows up there after riding Black Type the last 2 times. We talk about the musical chairs that is jockeys and how it can be kind of confusing looking too deep into that. But it's always something you want to keep in the back of your head when you're looking through these PPs. So, if I was going to take a horse that was in that 6 to 8 to 1 range, I think I would probably lean on Ring Weekend instead. But I understand the argument for sure for Black Type.
And I don't have anything against Ring Weekend. We should talk a little bit more about this favorite. Matt, you mentioned the obvious that he's one of the prime contenders in here. Is this a horse that you would consider saving with JK? I kind of like the inside draw. I think Castellano will be sort of forced to grab his position inside with the closers potentially compromised. This is a horse, whoever I end up with on my tickets, I'm going to have, if I end up betting Black Type to win, for example, I'm also going to have a 1-7. Because I just think Projected is a super likely winner and will be all over any plays I make in the picks.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people would think that he's probably the most interestingly bred. I mean, obviously the best bred horse in the race is Camelot Kitten. I mean,
says the biggest, the biggest fan of Bobby's Kitten ever. Yeah, you might as well be kin to Kinchin.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, you can leave Chad off if you want, but I would definitely use Projected. I'm just going to try to do something more clever. I get it. Drawn down inside is good, saved ground, but it's also drawn down inside can cause trouble. And so, you know, there's always a chance that he can kind of get into some trouble. And the fact that he shows up with two other horses in here, not that he really has a lot of choice of where he's going to run them, but a lot of other options, I guess. But definitely not the vote of confidence that you would like to see in a 9-to-5 shot.
As my buddy Frank Scatoni says, Frank did a good job out at the Del Mar contest last weekend. And his oft-quoted line, why enter two, or in this case three, when one would do? But I think you're right. Chad just has so many horses. I'm not too concerned about that kind of spotting. Projected is just not a horse who's going to beat me out of anything, but he's not a horse I need to press for all the for all those reasons that we've already discussed. Let's move on to race eight. It's the Grade One Test, another one of the signature races of the Saratoga meeting. Is the winner coming from the West Coast, Matt?
Oh, boy. I mean, you know, Faithian, I get it. She's really good. American Gal, I get it. She's really good. I mean, of the two, I'm much more a fan of American Gal than Faithian. There's something about Faithian that I'm not entirely sold on, and I think people are just going to see Baffert and immediately, and Bejarano making the trip, and immediately think that she's some, like, stone-cold cinch in here. I think this is an awesome race. I think you can go a bunch of different ways. You know, the real thing for me, if we're just talking like pick five wise, projected in the first race, he's one that I may not be afraid to just say, you know what, if he wins, I lose, I'm going to throw him out. Because in a race like this, I think Faithian is, put it this way, I have more faith in Faithian, even though I don't love her, than I do in projected in that race over possibly less than Firm Going for all the other reasons. In this race anyway, long story short, I like the seven. Divine Miss Gray for Danny Gargan. Gargan's barn over the past like month and a half, 2 months, going back to Belmont, is just on fire. When I printed my PPs or downloaded them, he was 3-for-5 at the meet. I don't know if he's had any other runners go at this point. She's a filly, though. People are going to look and see and say, okay, she was in a starter allowance two back. She was in an allowance race most recently. She's going to get the giant class hike. I tell you what, she's won on a wet track. She's won on a fast track. She's turning back from 8-to-7 here. She doesn't need the lead. I think she's going to press it just off. And visually, I mean, you go back and watch those two races. I don't have anything to knock about this horse. I think she's really good. I think she's going to kind of slip through the cracks. I believe she's like 10 or 12 on the line. She might even be higher than that when it's all said and done. I don't want to say officially because this is the first race that we have on the show tomorrow, but I'm probably going to end up on Divine Miss Gray as the actual pick.
What kind of a trip do you see her getting in here, Matt?
I mean, I think there's enough other speed in here. You just look down to the inside. Shallan's got to go for Peter Miller. Vertical Oak's going to be forwardly placed. Faithian, who is just outside of Divine Miss Gray, I think Faithian has to go as well. I just think there's a lot of gas in this race. I mean, Mini Blip even has got a little bit of early foot. I don't think that she's quite as fast as, you know, Shallan and Vertical Oak, but I think she works out Divine Miss Gray, maybe that 3-4 wide pressing trip. I understand inside has been where you want to be so far at this meeting, but it's a situation where circumstances and price, I can't get away from her if she's going to be north of 12-to-1.
And talking about the racetrack, these things can change. And if they don't change from what we've seen, my opinion in this race is going to change a lot, because I feel like on a fair track, boring opinion maybe, but I just feel like American Gal has that test winner look. I love having a horse. I love having a speed horse who's drawn outside. I think she's shown that she can finish. I think on a fair racetrack, I'd be very happy. There's other ways to go in here. I would definitely have backups. But for me, American Gal, it's almost like a lone A situation. And then I'd want some B's and C's in behind in what's obviously a competitive race. JK, you going to be busting out your Baffert wig for this one? You going to give us an impassioned defense of Faithian, or do you see it another way?
Oh, they lost my check luggage. I'm going to have to Uber back to the airport to see if it's in time. Hopefully the wig will be there when I get there. You know, here's the thing. I like Faithian here. I like another horse as well, but I'll get to that in a second. I know this seems kind of like down the rabbit hole a little bit, but I honestly believe there is a tactical advantage and a strategic advantage for Faithian with Bob Baffert knowing the ins and outs of American Gal. He's had her since she was a baby. He raced her all up until her last start. he knows that she doesn't like to be outside. She doesn't like to be outside of horses. She won't rate. She's going to go three or four wide. I feel like he can kind of tell Bejarano, here's what you need to know about American Gal being the one that you have to beat. And then he'll have an edge in getting that done. With that said, it does feel like they're going to cook in here. And I'm always a guy that's going to use the speed of the speed. So I'm going to use Fapien no matter what. The West coming out East thing, we've talked about it a million times, how powerful that can be. But I think Your Love is going to sit a perfect trip in behind with Irad, tucking back down on the inside. Obviously, Chad has proven himself to be a danger on any surface. And I think Your Love will be dangerous in that spot as well. But my top pick's going to be Fapien with Your Love in case the thing falls apart.
Now, what you were saying about American Gal, where did you get that from, about her not wanting to be outside and all that stuff? Or were you just sort of theorizing about what might
be? No, I was throwing out examples. I was throwing out examples about about things that Baffert will know about her. He'll have the best he'll have the best opportunity to beat her by looking at the race, handicapping the race, and then knowing what kind of filly she is and what she does or doesn't want to do. Maybe he knows that seven's going to be perfect for her, so he can sit behind and follow. Maybe he knows that seven's going to be a problem. I mean, there's a lot of things that he can know about her.
Gotcha. I just wasn't sure if you were talking about something that you...
Not specific.
If you'd read something I hadn't read about her not wanting to be outside, I was like, well, that could be a problem. But Your Love is definitely one of the ones I'd want to use as a fee. Definitely, like, from my point of view, a little bit more of an underneath horse, but definitely one worth underlining a little bit. We've already talked at pretty good length about the Grade 1 Whitney, and that will lead us to the De La Rose, which goes as race 10. JK, let's keep it with you. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, it's on the inner. We've talked about the inner, and it's obviously a course that you want to be forwardly placed. And inside saving ground helps on any turf course. Sassy Little Lila feels like the type of horse that's going to kind of get herself in that position. I've already declared my respect for Brad Cox when it comes to turf races for the remainder of his career. I think she's going to get the right trip. And if she gets loose, like so many turf horses do in New York, I think she's going to be super tough. For whatever reason, if someone gets cute and tries to run with her, to me, it's one of the two outside Chad horses with Alicia's World and Light in Paris. They both have had some really, really nice races this year. I think that they can get something to run into. They could be dangerous. But Sassy Little Lila is where I'm going to put a majority of my play in this pick five. One of my strongest opinions of the tactical advantage that she has. And I think she's just a really, really nice horse.
Now, Timeform has two horses, unless I wrote this down wrong, two horses as fast as Sassy Little Lila early and one even faster in this spot. That's not how you see this pace playing out?
Well, I mean, the tricky thing, I think what happens, and Matt mentioned it earlier, for whatever reason, I feel like the dirt horses that are coming to turf, they always seem to have them a little bit further ahead than maybe they will actually be on the pace projector.
Interesting.
And then the 3 and the 9, that's fine with Johnny's, we all know Johnny's not going to dead send out of there. And obviously Freudiani could. But 4080 also can get the perfect trip by sitting right off of Sassy Little Lila. And Bejarano has ridden how many turf races on the inner at Saratoga this year? Zero. So I feel like he'll struggle in the idea of really identifying, are we going too slow or not? But then it's like he's outside of her. So what is he going to do, rush up and take the lead in front of her and then be the scapegoat for her running bad? I just feel like they're going to pop out of there and do what they normally do at Saratoga and Naira in general. And Louis Saez will have Sassy Little Lila right there. Freudy Annie will sit right off of her. Sassy Little Lila is better. The rest of them will be back there jacking around at the paddock bar. I think she'll finish and get home first.
You make a great case about how it's going to play out from a pace point of view. I mean, Kendrick has no choice but to go, in my mind, on number 12, Proper Discretion. I just don't know if she's good enough to trouble Sassy Little Lila anyway, pace figures or no. Matt, what do you think about the pace in this race, and where did you end up going for your selection?
This race is kind of one of those that's like the most aggravating race in the world for me to look at, because I don't love Sassy Little Lila. I just think she might work out kind of the trip that Jonathan's talking about. I'm praying that someone goes with her, because more and more I go back and look at that Just the Game. I don't think that was a very good race. I mean, there was one horse that ran in there, and I think it was Antonel. You look at everyone else, all the other big girls, Celestine bombed. Dickinson, she wasn't very good. I mean, she was only a nose behind Sassy Little Lila, but we saw what she did in the Diana too. It's not, I mean, this isn't the Dickinson from earlier this year. And there were a couple other horses in that race too. Rocco Rojo never picked her feet up once. I kind of feel like Sassy Little Lila, although she set an honest enough tempo, I think she kind of got away with one. And that if she was going to win a big race, I also look at it too and go, why are you in the De La Rose and you didn't run last week in the Diana, or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was? I mean, I read into these things maybe a little bit too much, but I don't know. She, to me, is the kind of horse, she's going to get bet off the board. She might be 3-5 in here. And I kind of want to try to beat her. And I know this is going to sound foolish, because this horse, I believe, is still yet to beat anyone outside of New York breds. Bar of Gold has wanted, in my opinion, turf all along. And that most recent start, I know she finished second and it was, you know, an optional claimer, but it was better than what it looks on paper, because Grand Jeté might win the Beverly D here in a few weeks or next week. I'm concerned about, she's lost that sort of tactical gear. Like, why is she coming from 100 out of it? I want her to be sort of 2 or 3 lengths off the pace instead of 6 or 7. And I'm afraid that she's going to be too far back over this inner turf course with horses that have a tactical advantage over her. If she can stay within relatively close position, I think she's got a serious chance, because she's only tried turf twice. That aqueduct race, okay, she wasn't great in there, but I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. This is her first start in 4 months. And then they tried this one again most recently. And again, I think she ran a winning race. And the one that kind of, the race that made me think that, not just because of her pedigree, because I believe her dam is a grade one winner on turf, but, you know, the Medaglia d'Oros. You go back to that Presque Isle Masters back in September of last year. She made an awesome, awesome run on the far outside, and she rolled along. She didn't have the easiest of starts, but obviously the synthetic surface, it's more comparable to turf than dirt is, clearly. I just think she's an interesting runner in here. The problem is, I don't know that she's going to get the setup that she needs.
She's an interesting runner. I definitely see it. Those two turf races, premature seeming moves. Now Erad, a jockey who's good at producing a late run, or at least good finisher on turf, having had her once. Maybe if the pace heats up more than JK was suggesting that it might, I will definitely have some Bar of Gold on my tickets. And I'm also going to include Alicia's World, who I think is probably a little bit better than the last couple of runs suggest, as another one I think could be finishing well late in here. Did you have any other thoughts, Matt, on this race, especially from the point of view of what you mentioned before about horses who might move up with cut in the ground, if in fact that's the scenario?
Well, I mean, it'll be fascinating to see what you get from certain horses like, you know, a Boreal, who, I mean, she never changed leads in that race down at Delaware. That was over firm ground, but she's come from Europe. But it's worth noting, she ran mostly on synthetic over in Europe. On Leave, I've gone back and forth with this horse. I don't know how good she actually is. And I do wonder about the less than firm going. Is she better on firm? I don't know. I mean, you can go a number of ways. The two Chads, I've never been a huge fan of either one of them, but they both make a lot of sense. I wouldn't be surprised if either one of them won.
All right. We'll talk really quickly about this last race at Saratoga. If you guys had a chance to look, I mean, it looks on paper like Neolithic's race to lose, but maybe is that a spot where so many people are going to be singling in the late pick four, singling in the late pick five, that there's another direction to go here, JK?
This is what I kind of alluded to earlier. I can't think of a better word, really, and so maybe there is a better word, but I think it's kind of gross that, like, they were running him in here and going 7 off of the races he's ran in the last, you know, 365 days. They show up here when they could have run in the $1.2 million Whitney and have to beat one horse. I mean, wouldn't he be the second or third choice in the Whitney?
I think that's a very fair comment. I mean, I think they've said all along this is a prep for the Woodward. Horse just isn't ready for a test of that level. The question is,
well, if he's not ready for that, a test of that level, I don't really love him going seven in a situation where he's got a race run against some kind of nice horses off the layoff. It just doesn't get me going.
Well, who do you want to use instead?
I don't know. I'm kind of interested in Chivarelli. You know, the last few weeks, I feel like I've had to, like, doing that win play show, TV show, and doing other things. I feel like I've had to kind of give a lot of tutorials on, like, what racing is and how you do it and how you bet it. And one of the things I feel like I keep telling people over and over again is you got to read the conditions, and you really have to understand what the conditions mean, and it will help you understand what's likely to happen or not happen in a race. And in this race, it's an optional, it's an allowance, but there's an optional 62.5. So essentially, if you don't meet the conditions, most people that listen to this know this, if you don't meet the conditions, then you have to be for sale to be in the race, and Chivarelli shows up in here. I've always thought Chivarelli is an interesting kind of off and on type of horse, and he always seems to be around in these allowance types of races and shows his ability in these spots, and then the stakes races just kind of seem to be a little bit too deep for him. He gets Javier up, makes a ton of sense. I think Neolithic and Motown, are going to take a ton of money. Chivarelli would be one that I would try to get cute with in here, and then also Candy Promises for AC Avila. Bringing him out here, I think that horse could run well. AC's a little bit tricky from time to time.
Yeah, you could say that. Matt, you want to give a quick thought on the 11th and then send us home?
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of with Jonathan. I've chased Chivarelli. I bet him in the Aristides. It didn't work out for him. I used him in the Churchill Downs. It didn't work out for him. And he won at this level 3 starts back to Keeneland on a day when you needed to be a little bit more forward, and he was. The interesting thing is, again, there's not a ton of speed in this race. Warriors Club, I think, for Wayne, he's got to go. Other than that, I mean, Bolita Boys is going to be sent, but he's not that fast, I don't think. And he's getting a serious hike in class. I kind of think Chivarelli and Javier are going to work at a good trip. The question is whether he's good enough. The real question is Neolithic going to fire, first off? And if you still believe in Motown, because Motown, with the exception of his 2-year-old form, I mean, his 2 races thus far as a 3-year-old have been disasters. And you come back in a spot like this. If you think Motown's going to run, then sure, he's interesting. Neolithic, if you think he's going to fire, sure, he makes a lot of sense. But I don't want to touch him at 3-5. And Motown's going to be 2-1. And Chivarelli, he might get every bit of that 6 or 7-1. So it's an interesting race, especially if you think you can beat the heavy chalk and Pletcher coming off the bench from the Dubai World Cup in this spot. So, interesting, obviously, Naira Bets pick 5. If you're at the racetrack, you can play it. If you play it across the country on Naira Bets, so be it. We've got a few minutes, but because this is a special edition of the Matt Bernier Show and the DRF Players Podcast, I believe we have a special guest that is going to pop in, and this is a little bit of news to you guys, but I believe back in the studio, if we have it, let's hit it.
I'm going to miss the ball.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear
Daddy.
Happy
birthday
to
you.
That's
fantastic.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
That's amazing. Perrin making a guest appearance on the show. That is fabulous stuff. You'll have to tell me how that came to be. I absolutely love it. What a surprise.
This had been in the works for a little while. So on Peter Thomas Fornatel's birthday today, we get a little bit of something special on a special edition of the DRF Players Podcast, as well as the Matt Bernier Show. Let's wrap it up. We've got 2 minutes, kind of final thoughts before we pack this thing up and we move on to the Friday of racing at the spot. Jonathan, start with you.
Okay.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing everybody at Saratoga. It's going to be a lot of fun. Come see us tomorrow morning, and then we'll be running around for the next 12 days or so. It should be a ton of fun.
I've got two quick things for you, Matt. One, the ice cream man story. So the other day, we're at the old friends benefit. I'm signing some books. Barbara Livingston is signing many more books. Everybody was, of course, there to see her, sort of a celebrity signing of folks she's photographed over the years and her amazing work. And the ice cream man buys a book from Barbara, not from me, of course, but buys a book from Barbara and has her sign his book to the worst handicapper I know, except for Pete Fornatel.
Wow.
That was his revenge. Yeah.
Wow.
And I also want to say I should not be hoarding all the birthday week glory, Matt, as it's a well-known fact that it's your birthday right around now. Has it just happened, or is it just about to happen?
Today is the first day of the 28th year of my life.
Well, there you go.
I guess the second day, really, because yesterday was the birthday. So technically, it's the second day of the 28th year. So hopefully 28 ends up good. Hey, guess what? Let's start birthday weekends off on the right foot here today at Saratoga, huh?
I love it.
So without further ado, Jonathan, one last moment.
Yeah, let's get this. Let's get this six horse home. They're loading the gate right now.
It's going full degenerate. Oh, it wouldn't be any other way of having it here. So for Peter Thomas, Fornintel, for Jonathan Kinchin, the boys from the DRF Players Podcast, my name is Matt Bernier. Thank you for listening to the show. If you've listened to it live, again, livestream.com, live.drf.com, Twitter and Facebook for the Daily Racing Form pages. Also, special thank you to the boys for getting us hooked up with Spreaker this weekend. You can always listen to the Players Podcast on Tuesdays and Fridays on Spreaker.